Shalom, everyone. I'm Josiah Jeffrey.
I'm Hosea Jeffrey.
And we're back discussing the Torah portions. This week, we're looking at the portion of Balak, which goes from Numbers 22:2 through 25:9. On some years, this portion is read along with the previous portion, Chukat. So be sure to check the pinned comment below to see if you should read both portions or just this one this week. We've already read the portion ahead of time, so if you'd like to read it as well, why don't you go ahead and pause the video and do that, and then we'll go ahead and get into discussing.
In Balak, the king of Moab makes an alliance with the Midianites and commissions a prophet named Balaam to curse Israel in God's name. But when this fails, the Moabites and Midianites try to turn Israel aside to follow their gods instead of the one true God of Israel.
So this portion begins with Balak, the king of Moab, being worried about the people of Israel. Balak had seen how Israel had just wiped out a bunch of Amorites, as we had seen in the last portion, and he's worried that Israel is going to turn and do the same thing to Moab. So the camp of Israel is currently right in between the kingdom of Moab and the Jordan River, and then the promised land is right on the other side of the Jordan River. And so Moab is concerned Israel's just going to try and conquer all sorts of stuff, and they're going to conquer us too. And King Balak also gets the elders of the Midianites involved. So you have the Moabites and the Midianites, which are both people groups in the region. And they're like, we got to do something about Israel before they conquer us. And so at this point, Balak and the elders of Moab and Midian decide to summon a prophet named Balaam. As we read later in this portion, Balaam is from the country of Aram. So we had read way back in Genesis that Aram was actually where Laban, Jacob's uncle, had lived. And Jacob actually lived in Aram for a long time, and that's where he got his wives. Laban was actually a relative of Jacob and Isaac and Abraham, and we had read back then that Laban sort of had an idea of who God was, and he considered his God to be the same as the God of Abraham, but at the same time he practiced idolatry and had household gods. And so we see the same kind of thing here with Balaam. He's a prophet who, like, sort of talked to God, but he was also a diviner, and that's how he would summon God or whatever, and he also seems to have been involved in paganism and idolatry and such. But whatever the case, this prophet named Balaam, he has a reputation of whoever he curses is cursed, and whoever he blesses is blessed. And so Balak is like, hey, Balaam, we need you to come and curse Israel so that way we can conquer them and God, or maybe the gods, will be on our side. And so at first, when Balak's messengers come to Balaam, he says, I'll go talk to God and see if he wants me to go with you. And so he says, Adonai, should I go with Balak's men? And Adonai says, do not go with them. You shall not curse the people, for they are blessed.
I find it worth noting here that Balak came to Balaam saying, you have a reputation that whoever you bless is blessed and whoever you curse is cursed. But God is basically saying, you will not curse the people because I have blessed them. So God is the one who blesses whoever is blessed and curses whoever is cursed. And Balaam isn't allowed to curse whoever God blesses. And so that's what gives the impression that Balaam is the one doing it. But actually, it's God who's the one doing it, and Balaam just reflects what God does.
And so when Balaam says to Balak's messengers, I can't go with you, God doesn't want me to, they go back and they tell Balak. And then Balak sends more messengers, and he says, please, please come with me. Don't let anything stop you. Please come with me. He says, if you do come with me and you do curse Israel, then I'll bless you richly. So he's basically trying to give some financial incentive to Balaam to come and do his bidding. And so Balaam says, even if Balak were to give me a bunch of money, I wouldn't do it. But I'll go talk to Gen and I'll see what he says. Now, God has already said, don't go with these people. Israel is blessed. And here Balaam is asking God again after God has given a very clear answer. And so this time God says, all right, go ahead and go. Don't do anything that I don't tell you to, but go ahead. And so Balaam does go with them. But when Balaam goes with Balak's men, it says that God was angry because he was going, and the angel of Adonai took his stand in the way as an adversary against him, against Balaam. So God told Balaam, technically, you can go with Balak's men. But then God was angry and wanted to kill Balaam.
This is something we've already talked about before in previous portions, where God will sometimes enable people to continue in their unrighteousness to their own destruction. God already told Balaam exactly what was supposed to happen. And God told Balaam that Israel was blessed and was not to be cursed. But Balaam really, really wants to curse Israel because Balak promised him riches. And so because Balaam loves those wages, he's trying to get around God's instructions. And so God is kind of enabling him in that. He gave him permission to go and follow his wishes for these unrighteous wages. But he's going to make sure that Balaam destroys himself in the process if he keeps following along this path. And so as Balaam is going along the way, he's riding on his donkey with some escorts. And it says that the angel of Adonai is standing on the road ready to kill Balaam when he gets there. Now Balaam does not see the angel, but his donkey does. And so the donkey's response is to get out of the way, to turn away out of the road. And so the donkey goes off to the side into the field. And Balaam gets angry because he didn't see the angel. He thought he's just having a weird donkey that's behaving weird all of a sudden. And so he hits the donkey to get it to go back onto the road. So the donkey actually saved Balaam's life by going around the angel, even though that meant going into the field and making Balaam grumpy. But so the angel of Adonai tries again, standing in a narrow place between two walls. So once again, Balaam doesn't see him, but the donkey does. But since there are walls on either side, the donkey can't go out into the field like it did last time. So instead, it just kind of mushes up against the wall. And in doing so, it hurts Balaam's foot.
Then Balaam's like, "You stupid donkey, you hurt my foot," and he hits her again.
But once again, the donkey had managed to get around the angel and save Balaam's life. So the angel tries a third time in an even narrower spot. There is no getting around the angel this time. And so, as Balaam's riding this donkey toward his doom and doesn't know it, but the donkey does, the donkey decides to just sit down. It just lays there in the road with Balaam sitting on his back, not doing anything. And so Balaam is super angry that this donkey keeps not cooperating with him. And so he hits the donkey with his staff again. But at this point, Adonai does a most strange thing in that he opens the mouth of the donkey to talk in a human voice. And so the donkey talks to Balaam and says, "What have I done to you that you have struck me these three times?"
And then Balaam said to the donkey, "Because you have made a mockery of me. If there had been a sword in my hand, I would have killed you by now." So he's just so angry at this point. He doesn't care it's a talking donkey. He's like, "I just want to kill you, donkey."
Yeah, he says the donkey makes a fool of him, and he's the one talking to a donkey. And so then the donkey says to Balaam, "Am I not your donkey on which you've ridden all your life long to this day? Is it my habit to treat you this way?"
And Balaam's like, "No."
It's like the donkey is trying to get through Balaam's thick skull. "I'm a good donkey. I'm not being stupid. You're the one being stupid. Take it from the donkey. You're an idiot, Balaam."
And it's at this point that Adonai opens the eyes of Balaam and he sees the angel standing there ready to kill him. And once Balaam realizes, oh man, and he comes bowing to the ground, it's at this point that the angel says, "Why did you strike your donkey these three times? That donkey just saved your life." He says, "Behold, I have come out as an adversary because your way was contrary to me." So Balaam's way was set dead against God's wishes. And so God had sent his angel to be an adversary to Balaam to kill him. And the donkey's reaction is to turn away from the direction that Balaam wants to go. Balaam's direction was against God and ended in death. And so the donkey did the sensible thing, which is turn back and stop going that way. That's the only way to be saved.
Yeah, so we see here that God will sometimes enable people to follow their own way instead of his way, even when that way leads to destruction. But that doesn't mean he'll leave you all alone. That doesn't mean he'll leave you without someone telling you to turn back. God always puts a witness in someone's life to tell them when they're going the wrong way, even if he'll let them keep going in the wrong way if they love pursuing the fruit of unrighteousness. Even as he allows them to follow that, he will put influences in their life to let them know you can still turn back, You need to turn back or you're going to end up destroyed.
Later in 2 Peter, the apostle will reference the story of Balaam, talking about people who are intent on following their own evil ways, specifically the ways of luxury. Abandoning a right way, they went astray, having followed in the way of Balaam, the son of Beor, who loved the wage of unrighteousness, but had a rebuke of his own wrongdoing. A donkey without sound, having spoken in a man's voice, restrained the insanity of the prophet. So Peter says that Balaam loved the wage of unrighteousness. Even though he said with his words, I won't do anything, no matter how much gold you give me, if God doesn't let me, he still was wanting those riches. And so he still was answering back to God and going on the way of unrighteousness. And so had not the donkey restrained the insanity of the prophet, he would have died in his sin. And so in the same way, if we go astray and if we abandon the right way that's laid out in God's word because we want to satisfy ourselves, we want to satisfy our lust for money, our lust for sensuality, our lust for anything that would just make us feel happy. If we go away into what our own flesh desires, then we'll be in just as much danger as Balaam, and we will be just as unrighteous as Balaam. And another concept that I wanted to bring out about this is that what saved Balaam was a talking donkey. It is outright ridiculous, and yet that is the way that God chose to give the path to salvation to Balaam, the way to go away from destruction. And it reminded me of what Paul says in 1 Corinthians. For the word of the execution stake is foolishness to those indeed being destroyed, but to us, those being saved, it is the power of God. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and the intelligence of the intelligent I will bring to nothing. The foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. But God chose the foolish things of the world so that he might put the wise to shame. And God chose the weak things of the world so that he might put the strong to shame. Let no one deceive himself. If anyone seems to be wise among you in this age, let him become a fool so that he may become wise. So the main point here that Paul is bringing out is that God uses the foolishness of the world, well, supposed foolishness, what seems foolish to us, he uses that to proclaim his wisdom and his truth. Basically, if we want to be saved from the path that we're on, then we need to get off our high horse and submit to God's ways. We need to not think of ourselves as wise and all that. We need to not assume we're just on the right path because our own ways lead to destruction. Instead, God has chosen the foolish things of the world, just normal everyday people who aren't high and mighty. He's chosen us to proclaim the good news of Yeshua and to proclaim this crazy gospel that God has given us. It may seem ludicrous to people who are in their own ways, but that's because they don't have the wisdom of God. They have the wisdom of men, and that is foolishness compared to the wisdom of God.
Yeah, Balaam was concerned that the donkey was making a mockery and a fool out of Balaam. But in fact, like we already read, the donkey was restraining Balaam's insanity. Balaam, the prophet, the diviner who hears God's words, he was being foolish compared to a donkey. Mm. And the reason why is because Balaam was foolish enough to go his own way instead of God's way. And the donkey was wise enough to see that when destruction is along your path, you should get out of the way. And so the donkey, which is seemingly foolish in the eyes of a person, in the eyes of Balaam, was seen as foolish, was wise, because it turned Balaam out of the way that leads to destruction. Mm. That is our job, to try to turn people out of the way that they are going, which seems wise to them, but is leading to their own destruction. And when we try to turn people out of that way, they will think we are foolish because they think they are headed to riches. They think they are headed to glory. They think they are going to get everything they want, but they're only going to get death. And so we, no matter how foolish we seem to the world, are wise. If we proclaim the truth, if we act in that truth and try to get people to realize their own foolishness by showing them that they shouldn't follow in their own way, they shouldn't love the wages of unrighteousness, they should only follow in God's way, which leads to life, which is only through Yeshua. So now that Balaam has seen the angel and the donkey has restrained his insanity, he now says to the angel, "Oh boy, I messed up. I sinned. I'm sorry. If this was a bad idea, I guess I'm going home." But the angel actually then says to Balaam, "No, go with the men, but only say what I tell you to say." So Balaam does end up continuing and he goes to Balak. But he's not going for Balak anymore. Now he's going for God. And so the result won't be like Balak expects. So now Balaam meets Balak, and they meet at a city at the very edge of the territory of Moab, right near where the people of Israel are encamped. And Balak is basically saying to Balaam, "Why didn't you come the first time I called you? Don't you know I can give you money?" And Balaam says, "Well, I'm here now, but I'm only going to say what God tells me to say." So Balak brings Balaam up to a high place where he can see some of the people of Israel encamped in the distance. And Balak is like, "Okay, you're here. You can see the people. Perfect spot to curse them, right?" And Balaam's basically like, "Maybe. Let's find out. Build some altars and sacrifice animals on them, and I'll go over here and do my omen interpretation and figure out what God wants me to do." And so God does come and talk to Balaam and tells him, "This is what you're going to say to Balak." And so then he goes back to Balak and he starts his word from God. And so what Balaam says is this: "From Aram, Balak has brought me, the king of Moab from the eastern mountains. Come, curse Jacob for me, and come, denounce Israel. How can I curse whom God has not cursed? Who can count the dust of Jacob, or number the fourth part of Israel? Let me die the death of the upright, and let my end be like his." So Balaam comes outright and says it. Balak wanted me to curse Israel. God said no. So here's a blessing for Israel.
And Balak is like, No, I told you to curse Israel, and now you're blessing them? All right, let's try this again. Let's go somewhere else, and maybe this time God will let you curse Israel. Okay, let's do more sacrifices and go over to this spot.
And he basically says, "This time you blessed them for saying that there were so many of them, they were like the dust. So this place that I'll take you to, you can only see a little bit of them. You won't see them all. Then curse them there." And so they do the same thing again. They sacrifice the animals, Balaam looks for a word, and God gives him a word. And so he comes back to Balak, and Balak asks him, "What do you say this time?"
"A curse, right?"
And what do you know? Balaam starts to bless Israel again. He says, "God is not man that he should lie, or a son of man that he should change his mind. Has he said, and will he not do it? Behold, I received a command to bless. He is blessed, and I cannot revoke it. He has not beheld misfortune in Jacob, nor has he seen trouble in Israel. Adonai their God is with them, and the shout of a king is among them. Behold, a people, as a lioness it rises up, and as a lion it lifts itself. It does not lie down until it has devoured the prey and drunk the blood of the slain." So Balaam is once again saying God wants to bless Israel. He does not want to curse Israel, and he is extremely clear on this. He is not going to change his mind because he is God, and this is his people. God is with Israel. And that's not going to change, so neither will the result of Balaam's prophesying. And so then Balaam tacks on this blessing that Israel is going to have victory like a lion. It is going to destroy everyone in its path and have its fill of its enemies' blood. And so this freaks Balak out. Balak wanted Balaam to curse Israel so that they would be easier to fight. And now Balaam is prophesying victory of Israel over all of their enemies, that their enemies will end up dead. So this is the last thing Balak wants, because not only is he blessing Israel, but he's inadvertently cursing Israel's enemies, which Balak is. And so he says to Balaam, "Do not curse them at all, and do not bless them at all.
Just shut up.
Because everything Balaam is doing is making everything worse. But then Balaam says, "Look, I told you from the get-go, I'm only going to say what God tells me to say." And Balak is like, "You know what? Let's try one more time. I've got one more place." So it says he took Balaam to the top of Peor, which overlooks the desert. So another really high place. And once again, Balaam says, build the altars, sacrifice the animals. But this time, Balaam doesn't go looking for omens or anything because, like we've already said, he knows what God's going to say and he knows God's not going to change his mind. And so it says that the Spirit of God actually came upon Balaam at this point and he starts speaking blessings for Israel. And so this time he says, God brings Israel out of Egypt and is for him like the horns of the wild ox. He shall eat up the nations, his adversaries, and shall break their bones in pieces and pierce them through with his arrows. Blessed are those who bless you, and cursed are those who curse you. So Balaam is once again prophesying victory for Israel and destruction for their enemies, describing in brutal detail the destruction of the enemies. And then he caps it off with, blessed are those who bless you, and cursed are those who curse you. Putting the blessing of Abraham on the people of Israel. All the way back in Genesis 12, this was the foundational promise that God made to this people. And so Balaam is once again reaffirming that for all of Israel's enemies and for all of the attempts to find a curse against Israel, no curse can be found because this is the promise that God gave to Israel. And this promise will never change.
It's really interesting here that nowhere here is it talking about Israel's righteousness or anything like that. It's just talking about God is with them. This is God's people. God has blessed this people. It's all about God's relationship with Israel. It's not about Israel's relationship with God and how good Israel is. As we've seen a lot already in Numbers and in Exodus, Israel can be very unfaithful to God, but that doesn't negate that God has blessed Israel. Israel is blessed no matter what. As the prophets say, he who touches Israel touches the apple of God's eye. No one can stand against Israel, not because of anything that Israel has done or will do, but because God is with them.
So at this point, Balak is really angry against Balaam because Balaam just said, cursed are those who curse you, and Balak has been trying to get a curse against Israel. So Balaam has even more directly cursed Moab. And so Balak says, I called you to curse my enemies, and behold, you have blessed them these three times. Therefore, now flee to your own place. I said I will certainly honor you, but Adonai has held you back from honor. So Balak is saying, just get out of here, just go, and I'm not going to pay you. Because you didn't do what I brought you here to do. I brought you here to curse Israel, and you've only blessed them. So get out of here. Grr. And so Balaam's response is, I said I'm going to say whatever God tells me to say, and I'm not even done yet. Balaam says, I will let you know what this people will do to your people in the latter days. So now Balaam is about to directly prophesy about what Israel is going to do to Moab. And he says, I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. A star shall come out of Jacob, and a scepter shall rise out of Israel. It shall crush the forehead of Moab. Edom shall be dispossessed. Seir also, his enemies, shall be dispossessed. Israel is doing valiantly, and one from Jacob shall exercise dominion and destroy the survivors of cities. So if he wasn't saying it clearly before, Balaam now prophesies in explicit terms that Israel is going to destroy Moab one day. But more than that, he refers to a specific one from Israel who will destroy Moab. A star from Jacob and a scepter, a ruler, is going to come from Israel, and he is going to destroy all of Israel's enemies and have dominion. And so Balaam seems to be prophesying about the Messiah, the king of Israel, who's going to come and deliver Israel from all her enemies.
It's kind of similar to the prophecies that we read back in Genesis about how the seed of Abraham will possess the gate of their enemies. Again, echoing that concept of one specific Israelite who is going to rule all the nations and subjugate the enemies of God's people. And this is also somewhat similar to the much more explicit messianic prophecy found in Psalm 2. Why are the nations in an uproar and the peoples devising a vain thing against Adonai and against his anointed, his Messiah? And then God says to the Messiah, you are my son, today I have begotten you. Ask of me, and I will surely give the nations as your inheritance, and the very ends of the earth as your possession. You shall break them with a rod of iron. You shall shatter them like earthenware. So Psalm 2 and also Balaam's prophecy both speak to the concept of the coming king of Israel who is going to rule over and subjugate all of Israel's enemies and give Israel victory, peace, and security. The Messiah is essentially the culmination of the blessings of Israel. Israel is blessed and they'll receive the fullness of that blessing through the coming of the Messiah. And so, the Master Yeshua, he came once as a sin offering, but he'll come again to salvation. And when he comes, it will mean death and destruction for all of Israel's enemies. It will be a bloodbath. It will be like a lion devouring its prey. But in the end, Yeshua will reign from Zion, and he will bring peace for all of Israel, and indeed to the ends of the earth. Now, after all this happens with Balaam blessing Israel when he was supposed to be cursing Israel, the portion then finishes up by saying that Moab takes a different approach to try to undermine Israel. What it says is that Moab and the Midianites lead Israel away into idolatry and sexual immorality. Basically, what happens is, first the sons of Israel start playing the harlot with the daughters of Moab. And then the Moabites and Midianites invite the Israelites to a banquet for their gods. And the people of Israel start eating of the idol sacrifices and bowing down to Baal, which is a foreign, evil, idolatrous god. And so when Israel had joined themselves to Baal, it says that Adonai got super angry. And he tells Moses explicitly to take the leaders of Israel who are worshiping Baal and to publicly execute them for all the Israelites to see. And meanwhile, God is sending a plague through the people of Israel, which is killing them in their tens of thousands. And so as Moses is commissioning the execution of the leaders of Israel, it says that there's one Israelite who starts publicly flaunting that he's about to go and sleep with a Midianite woman. So he's about to go and engage in blatant sexual immorality. And one of the priests named Phinehas, he's the son of the current high priest Eleazar, who is in turn the son of Aaron. And Phinehas then follows this Israelite man and Midianite woman into their tent. And as they're lying there, he takes his spear and he thrusts them both through as they're in the act and kills them both on the spot. And when God sees Phinehas' zeal for God and zeal against sinfulness in Israel, that ends the plague. God's wrath is averted and the plague ends after there's been a death toll of 24,000 Israelites. And one other thing that I want to point out about this here is that later in the Torah, it makes explicit that Balaam was actually heavily involved here. Balaam was one of the main people who was leading Israel astray into idolatry and sexual immorality. So obviously, Balaam was not a good guy, and he had not learned his lesson. He was still trying to subvert Israel and lead them astray from God and basically tear Israel apart from the inside out.
And so this adds more context to what it means to follow in the way of Balaam. And Peter also calls upon this when looking more at the context. He says that certain people, as irrational animals, will also be destroyed in their destruction, suffering wrong as the wage of unrighteousness, counting as pleasures the luxury in the daytime. They are spots and blemishes, luxuriating in their deceits as they are feasting with you. Having eyes full of adultery and unable to cease from sin, they go about enticing unstable souls. Abandoning a right way, they went astray, having followed in the way of Balaam, the son of Beor. They entice in the lusts of the flesh, in sensuality, those barely escaping from those conducting themselves in error. They are promising to them liberty, themselves being slaves of the decay. So Balaam's way was to follow after the wages of unrighteousness, to count the unrighteous things like sexual immorality and the lusts of the flesh as pleasures. And this way is not followed in solitude. It involves enticing other people to follow along with you, saying that you have the way that leads to luxury and pleasure, and that you can find happiness in unrighteousness and in following your own lusts, and it results in these people being unable to cease from sin. They say that following after your own desires is liberty, but instead they are enslaving themselves to sin. They can't stop if they want to. This is the way that leads to destruction. They think that they love the wage of unrighteousness, but instead the wage of unrighteousness is being destroyed in their destruction.
And another passage that relates to this is found in Yaakov, or James, when he says, "Adulteresses, have you not known that the world's friendship is hostility with God? Whoever then wants to be a friend of the world is made an enemy of God." So the people of Israel found themselves becoming enemies of God when they started whoring after the daughters of Moab and whoring after the gods of Moab. They became adulterers and adulteresses. They were cheating on God with Moab and with Baal. And so in the same way, whenever we bring the world's influences into our lives and we allow those and love those and bring them near and bring them close and they satisfy us, whenever we do that, we are making ourselves enemies of God, and the result is destruction. Like those 24,000 Israelis, or like those pair who were stabbed through by Phinehas, the result is death. It feels so good now, but the end is death. Originally, Moab and Midian had wanted to outright attack Israel, but we've seen in previous portions how that goes. If you attack Israel, you'll be destroyed. They have God fighting for them, and they're ready for an attack from other nations. But what Moab and Midian did here is they subverted things. They went to the inside and fooled Israel into thinking that they were friends. And so Israel allowed destruction and welcomed it into their gates. In the same way, sometimes it might even be easier to resist persecution than it is to resist temptation. Temptation has a way of playing on our own desires, as Yaakov also says. And in doing so, it infiltrates its way into our lives and pretends to be a friendly force. The wages of sin is death. And sensuality, adultery, idolatry, all of these things, they pretend to be something that is on your side, when in reality, it is getting you away from God. Reject their friendship, push it away, keep those worldly forces out of your life, and stay close to God alone.
And so I think the big takeaway from this portion is don't take pleasure in the rewards of unrighteousness. Balaam followed Balak to curse Israel because he wanted the wage that Balak was going to give him. Even though he knew God didn't want him to curse Israel, he thought, well, I can go with Balak and try and curse him anyway, right? But he couldn't. He almost ended up dead, if not for the donkey saving his life. The result of following his own way, contrary to what God wanted, was not a good wage, it was death. And though Balaam barely escaped that himself, he then led the people of Israel into that. The Moabites and Midianites persuaded Israel that sexual immorality and idol feasts were all good things, rewards to be had. But following after your own pleasures in unrighteous ways only leads to death, as 24,000 Israelis learned for themselves. Instead, we must only take pleasure in God and take pleasure in His will. Only do exactly what He tells us to do. Only say what He tells us to say. Not go along in our own way. Not follow our own wisdom. Only follow God's wisdom, however foolish it may seem. Because following God's way leads to life.
That wraps up the portion of Balak. Next week, we'll be looking at the portion of Pinchas. So be sure to tune in for that. Thanks so much for watching. Be sure to like, share, comment, subscribe, and hit the notification bell to keep updated on new videos. And if you would, please consider sending us a donation to help us make more videos like these. We would really appreciate it. Thanks again for watching, and we'll see you next week. God bless.